Here on Daf Gimel Amud Aleph, at the sugya of Chalipin, this sugya is based on Kicha Kicha Mistei Ephraim. The question is how to learn Kicha Kicha Mistei Ephraim. And what the Rishonim point out at the very start of this sugya is that there are two ways of understanding Kicha Kicha Mistei Ephraim. What is this Gzeirah Shavah teaching me? Is this Gzeirah Shavah teaching me that kinyane sada, meaning any kinyan that works by sada, work by isha? So then the thrust of the Gzeirah Shavah is on the sada, and we're going to derive kinyane sada to isha. Or no, the kicha of the sada, which was bekesef, is the basis for this equation to kedusha isha. So we're not going to take all kinyani sada and transpose them to kiddushin. What we're going to look at is the kicha, the way that Avraham Avinu took the sada and acquired the sada from Ephron. That method is going to be equated to kedusha isha. So let's go through the two ways and see the nafkamina between the two. If we take the first way and we say the kinyane sada should work by isha, if that's the nature of the Gzeirah Shavah, then what conclusion should we derive? If kinyane sada work by isha, if that's what it says here, what conclusion should we derive? Can anybody help me with that? What else? Everything. But not just chalipin. Chalipin, shtar, chazok. You go down the whole bit. And we said basically, you know, you don't know why the Gemara raises the issue of chalipin. It's sort of like chalipin v'chule over here in this Gemara. And really the Gemara could have asked from shtar, and the Gemara later on derived shtar from a different source. And the Gemara could have asked from chazokah. Any kinyan that works by sada works by isha.
With the shtar that the Gemara derives later on, meaning that if shtar was only derived from here, would it have the same halacha as the shtar from there as well?
Are you have my pox mishav pruta, that issue?
No, I'm just wondering.
What issue? Lishma, things like that?
Yeah, things like that.
Very good, excellent. Why would it... If it would derive from Stei Ephron, then it would be kinyani mama, shtari mama. If it would derive from gitin, it would be the dinim of get. You're right. So that's going to be an interesting point that we should take up a little later when Tosus makes his whole bit. Why didn't the Gemara derive shtar from here? If we go with the other way, though, if we say that the Gzeirah Shavah is not teaching me sada to isha, but rather kicha of sada to kicha of isha, then what was the kicha of the sada? It was only kesef, and then we have no right to derive any other kinyanim to isha.
And then what the question?
Oh, exactly. And that's where Tosus is going to work overtime to try to figure out why does Gemara then think that in the context of Kicha Kicha Mistei Ephron we should derive Chalipin. Now there are a couple of points here in this sugya that are interesting just in terms of the structure of this sugya. Number one, the Gemara is the framework of this Gemara, the whole background of this Gemara is called what? In terms of the Talmudic discourse, what would you call it? Minyana limute mai. That's a classic. That's a real, you know, Talmudic principle. And interesting is that on the first round, the Gemara doesn't present chalipin as a candidate. What does the Gemara present as a candidate? Chuppah. Interesting. And the Gemara only rejects Chuppah because of whom? Rav Huna. Are we familiar with the Gemara? Good. I'm assuming you learned the Gemara. I hope. Yeah. No, I told you yesterday. Start from the two dots. Okay, that's it. So it just fascinates my mind that in terms of the presentation, the style of the Gemara, that the Gemara only after reaching a dead end with chuppah, then let's raise the possibility that Levutei Mai is coming to excluding chalipin. I don't know why the Gemara thinks that chuppah would have been a better candidate than chalipin. And maybe the whole thrust of this Gemara is that chuppah is a kinyan ishus. And it's only after we exhaust any possible kinyan ishus then, you know, as a then as a default position, because we're stuck, then we'll try classical kinyane moment. You understand what I mean? So, in truth, why is chuppah superior to chalipin? Why would it make more sense that maybe the Rav Yehuda Hanasi thought that chuppah would be, you know, would be a pasva, therefore he had to tell me minyana?
It already works.
It works by issues. Oh, but what aspect of issues? Why is Gemara rejected? It works only by nisuin and not by kiddush. So the Gemara says, but what about Rav Huda? Rav Huda thinks that if you have a scale of 0 to 100, then Kiddushin takes you about from 0 to 10, and Nisuin takes you from 10 to 100. You know, the full 90 yards. In other words, which is more powerful in terms of, you weigh it in terms of Ishus? Is Ishus basically Kiddushin, or is Ishus basically Nisuin? I don't think it's 50-50. I'll tell you why. See, you weren't here for this, but we discussed at great length, what is marriage? It's an important question, though. So, right, can we not get lemaise? So what is marriage? Is marriage a kinyan? You know, is it a kinyan? Or is marriage an isur? She becomes hasura kuli alma kehegdish. So, now let's get back to our other question. Having said that marriage has two dimensions to it, it's kinyan, and it's also isur, which is more powerful? Which takes you, you know, in a football field, which takes you further along the line towards your goal? Is it kiddushin or is it nisuin? Nice, you tell me it depends. It should depend upon which dimension of marriage you're emphasizing. From the perspective of kinyan, you'll come to one conclusion. From the perspective of isur, you'll come to an entirely different conclusion. Let's go the easy way. From a perspective of isur, that we say the kiddushin is the asalat kuli alma kehegdesh, which is the most important? Where's the mishkal hakaveh, the weight? No, it's our kiddushin. What's the status of a woman after kiddushin, as far as kuli alma is concerned? Okay. It's a chiv misa. It's a capital crime. The serious weight, I mean, nisuin does add something in a bas kohen shezitzo, but other than that, which is a fluky kind of case, there's no difference between kiddushin and nisuin as far as isur is concerned. The same exact isur applies. But now I'll ask the question from a different perspective. In terms of the kinyan that the Baal has on the isha, meaning all the rights that he has, heter bia, and Maisi Adel Abayla, and the fact that he yarshins if she dies, when is that kicked off? Nisuin. So from the perspective of Kinyone Abal, Nisuin is greater. So Rav Huna comes up with a Kal Vachomer. Rav Huna says, if Chuppah works for Nisuin, which takes us 90% of the way in terms of Kinyon, then certainly it should work for Kedusha. But at least we see that we're working within the framework of Kinyone Ishus. Chuppah is a classical Kinyone Ishus. What else can you buy with Chuppah besides Ishus? You don't know? Nothing. You can't buy anything with chuppah. So chuppah is a kinyan issue. So the Gemara says, but we're stuck with Rav Huna, and now we're going to have to ask the question, according to Rav Huna, why did the Mishnah say three and not four? Really, there are four methods, and what's the answer? It's a kalvachomer. If it's learned from a kalvachomer, you see there are three basic methods, and then whatever you derive from a kalvachomer, that's already logically inferred. It doesn't have to be mentioned in the Mishnah. But according to Rav Huna, if chuppah is included in the Mishnah and it works for kiddushin, and we're going to see in Mirtz Hashem and Eben Ezer in Siman Chavav that if a man goes ahead and he takes a woman into a chuppah, that chayshina lekiddushin. It seems like we are worried we're going to require a get before we allow to get married because of Rav Huna. That's this interesting thing. We're not sure that the Gemara is rejecting Rav Huna, because you see that the Gemara is trying very hard to explain our Mishnah Minyani Lamute Mai according to Rav Huna. So the Gemara wasn't so quick to reject Rav Huna.
What does Achubah Rav entail? Does that just bring her into your
Rishos? Into your Rishos, correct. The Rambam says you need Yichud. Other Rishonim say you need Klunsos. You know, there are many different Shittas we'll get to when we get to Ksubas Mishnah, what Chuppah is. So you take a woman into a chuppah without kiddushin, and according to the Shulchan Aruch, I mean, we'll see the Ramah, there's a need for a get after that. So you see that chuppah is a serious candidate. So we come back to our original question: is minyana lemuteima? There's a very, very fascinating Rashi here. It's not for today on what chuppah is all about. Rashi, take a look, says something very strange. I'm sure you all noticed it. Rashi says, Lemute chuppah. You have it about six lines up before the end of the page. Shemashala avia lechuppah, l'shem kiddushin, eino mekudeshes bekach. How did Rashi learn the case of chuppah? A ketana. The father is giving over his daughter for marriage, and he brings her into the chuppah. Why? What forced Rashi's hand? I mean, the Gemara, there's no allusion, there's no hint in the Gemara that we're talking about kiddushay ketana yidei avia. So the Gemara says, chlip. Minyana lemute mai, lemute chlipin. I might think that you can marry a woman with chlipin, just like what? You could be known as a sada with chlipin. So we have the gzereshav kicha kicha. So at this point in the Gemara seems to be operating within the framework of the gzereshav. But that's going to lead us to problems, as we said before. If the Gezeirah Shavah is the entire basis for this sugya, for this havamin of chalipin operating, then what about shtar? And what about chazaka? Why didn't the Gemara ask those questions? That's what Tosis is going to focus on. Now the Gemara says, "Come Ashvala, Rav Yehuda Anasi wrote the number 3 to exclude chalipin. So if a man tries to marry a woman with chalipin, it's not valid." Again, we're going to have to, structurally, we're going to have to figure out exactly what's going on here. Because in chalipin, what do you usually give a woman? Or a man, whatever, whoever you buy something in chalipin, what do you give? A kli, correct? A kli. No. So if you give a kli, it looks awfully similar to reat mekudeshes li betabazu. Tabas could also theoretically be used as chalipin, could it not? Do we have to use a sudar? Do we have to use a pen? Or a yalbaka? You can use so many different things for chalipin, as long as it's a kli. So, if he gives it to b'toras chalipin, and not b'toras kesef, then the kedushin is invalid. How does she know whether, and how do we know, how do the Edom know, whether he's giving it to her as kesef or he's giving it to her as chalipin? And everything hinges on that. If he gave it to her because shava kesef ki kesef, then it's mahani. If he gave it to her as chalipin, it's not mahani. So what is it? He makes a declaration, hare zet tabazu b'chalipin? Is that what he said? That's another problem in this. So again, let's just review our props. Number one, we want to know why the Gemara insists on going through the whole chuppah business. Number two, why does the Gemara make this logical deduction of chalipin as a candidate for kedushin hinge on the gzeirah shavah? Number three, what is the nature of the gzeirah shavah? Is the gzeirah shavah between sada and isha, or is the gzeirah shavah for kicha and kicha? And number four, does the Gemara really believe that there's such a fundamental difference between giving a kli as chalipin and giving a kli as shavah kesef ki kesef? How do we know the difference? Why does one work and one not? So the Gemara says the following: V'ema hachinami. Here I want to go through the Gemara with you inside. Till now we've been talking outside. Let's see it inside. Two lines up before the end of Daf Gimel Amud Aleph. V'ema hachinami. Let's understand what bothers the Gemara. You've made such a great case for chalipin. Chalipin works by sada. Why? So why is Rav Yehuda Anasi excluding it? What's the maskana? What's the case against chalipin? So the Gemara answers that chalipin isnu bepachos mishava pruta. The isha bepachos mishava pruta lo makanya nafshe. So here we have a machlok shin Rashi and Tosus. Rashi has the gears as we have it, nafsheh. Tosus insists on taking out the word nafsha. I don't think Tosus had a different girsa, by the way. Because he's forced, because the nature of the sugya and its development, to take out the word nafsha. And what's lo makanya nafsha, the way Rashi has the girsa? Rashi says the gnai hula, and Rashi introduces the concept of gnai, that a woman is makpid, exactly how much she receives in kesef, and if you give her something less than a pruta, that's a gnai. It's such a gnai that even if you would give her as chlipin a kli that's worth a pruta, it would still be a gnai. Because really you're not giving her the value, and if you're not giving her something of value, even though it does happen to have a market value, but that's not what you're giving it to her. You're giving it to her b'tor ha-sleepin, Rashi says, is therefore batal etor ha-sleepin b'kedushin. Because of this gnai, we have to completely undermine the entire validity of kinyan chlipin, even if the kli was worth a pruta. See Rashi on the second line, vafilu, please underline those words, vafilu b'kli sheyesh bo shava pruta. Iyoyev la b'lashon chlipin, Rashi addresses that question, how do you know whether he gave it to her as shava kesef and kesef, or as chlipin? He gave it to b'lashon chlipin. So he said, I'm giving you this as chlipin, it's not valid. He's got to give it to her in a lashon of kesef, in a lashon of a kinyan kesef or a kinyan kedushin. So Tosus raises the following objection: where does Rashi get this concept of gnai hula? Where did Rashi come from? By the way, that's a general rule. Whenever you see Rashi introducing a new concept, you should always ask yourself, where did Rashi get it from? It's very rare that Rashi invents terminology bottom ilibo that doesn't have some sort of basis. So if you take a look on Daf Yud Aleph, and this is the famous sugya of Maitamayu de Beit Shammai. Why does Beit Shammai jack up the requirement from pruta to dinar? And the Gemara introduces this concept of kpela. Omer Abzera, my tamay de Beit Shammai, Omer Abzera, shekein isha makpedes al atzma. The enav is kadeshes bepochos mi dinar. So here on Daf Yud Aleph we encounter the concept of kpela. So Rashi says, therefore, the opposite, if you violate hakpela, that's called a gnai. So therefore, Beit Shammai assumes that if you give a woman less than a dinar, she's makpid, and it's almost an insult to her. Maybe we'll talk about this a little at a greater length in the afternoon when we talk in Evedeza terms, because we'll see that a woman could have all sorts of kpedis, you know, there's very sensitivity here, you know. If, for example, she wants the kesef kedushin in her hand, and instead he throws it into her lap, so she's makpedis. You know, this whole concept of kpeda and gnai seems to be very high profile with regard to kedusha kesef. Tosa says the following. The Gemara on Daf Yud Aleph is not so happy with this concept of kpeda. What question does the Gemara raise on Beit Shammai if Beit Shammai is to be interpreted as an issue of kpeda?
The fancy women.
Correct, the fancy women. That's called Batsei de Rav Yanai. So then, right here, at the beginning of this Masechta, according to Rashi, we should already be yelling and screaming, what about Batsei de Rav Yanai? If you're talking about kpeda, then wouldn't it be an insult to these women coming from highfalutin society in the upper financial echelon to give them less than a Turk of a Dedinri? So what's the basis of Tosus' cash? Anybody want to help me with that? What's really bothering Tosus? Is it just this technicality? The Gemara should have raised this problem here on Daf Gimel, and why did it wait till Daf Yud Aleph? It should have been Zrizim Akdimim Lemitzvahs. That's what bothers Tosus?
No, because it's a fundamental question on Kesef in general, on Kiddush in general, not only on Beit Shammai's dinner.
It should also be on?
Everyone.
Meaning? Beis Shammai, exactly. Tanel says very beautiful. We thought that there was a fundamental difference between Beit Shammai and Beit Hillel. What was Beit Hillel looking for? Kesef. Beit Hillel is looking for Kesef. Everything has its shear in the Torah. There's halach of achila, it's got to be kizayis. There's halach of shsia, it's got its shear. Netila has its shear. Everything has its shear. What's the shear of kesef? What gives kesef the chshivus that you can call it kesef? That's Beit Hillel's issue. Beit Shammai introduces a whole other element. Afilu im timtzalomer kesef havi. You already have the pruta. You've passed the minimum, the bare minimum of kesef. But there's another element. Kpedu. And therefore, let's jack it up to a dinah. Oh, if you're worried about kpeda, then for Bansi de Rav Yani, we have to set a whole different standard of kpeda. We need a tirkago de dinri. The dinri's off. If Beis Hillel is also guilty of requiring kpeda, of avoiding kpeda, the way Rashi interprets why chalipin was bumped off, because chalipin is an insult to a woman, because chalipin doesn't have anything to do with the value that she's receiving, and therefore she's makpedes. If there's something puzzle, treif, and insulting about chalipin to a woman's dignity, then you're introducing a whole new standard. Then the Gemara should have raised the question, if you're introducing a standard, then the sky's the limit. You can't tell me what's the absolute kpeda that shovel chol nefesh. There's no absolute over here. It depends on different financial strata. The Gemara's entire objection to Beit Shammai by introducing the kpeda element should have been raised as an objection against Beit Hillel. In effect, the way Tosis understands the Gemara on Yud Aleph is the following. Bishlema, according to Beit Shammai, Nicha. I would never ask the question of Bansai de Rav Yana, because there is no halach of kpeda. There's halach of kesef. But according to Beit Shammai, that introduces kpeda, therefore he jacks up the price from a pruta to a dinar. Now we have a question from Bansai de Rav Yana. So Tosis says, according to Rashi, if the Gemara rejects chlipin because chlipin is a gnai, then even Beis Hillel, according to Rashi, is on the same turf as Beit Shammai. There's no bishlema. The kasha that Reb Zera was raising on Daf Yud Aleph was not a proof to support Beis Hillel, because even Beis Hillel would suffer the same vulnerable to the same attack. Namely, if you're introducing kpeda, then kpeda should work on different levels depending upon who you are.
Isn't kpeda and gnai two different things?
I don't know. At this point, I think they're equal. But if you have something to say, I'm not that far advanced in this. As I say, we're just touching base. I'm assuming that kpeda and gnai are the same. If you want to take it from there, then I'm certainly open to all suggestions. But that's question number one on Rashi. Question number two on Rashi: if the Gemara's equation here between chalipin and kesef is based on kicha mistei Ephraim, if that's the thrust of the Havamina, then what about shtar? What about chazakah? Why don't we introduce all the kinyanim that apply by sada and by virtue of the gzeirah shava derived of an isha? And yet the Gemara looks for a source for shtar. And then Tosis asks another question. The kashal Rabbeinu Tam on the second line of Tosis in Kain Pashta Yadav Kibla Tiskadish Poks Mishav Pruta. Once again, Tosis is basing himself on the Gemara Daf Yud Aleph. The Gemara says that in the case of Bansei Derav Yanai, you don't have to be Makadisha with a Tirkava de Dinri. Why not? Because Pashta Yadav Kibla. So you see that whenever the issue is kpeda, a woman could waive, W-A-I-V-E, waive her kpeda, and therefore she could be happy with less than that price, and say, I'm not my kpedis, I don't have a kpeda. If that be the case, then if chalipin is a problem of kpeda, let her waive the kpeda. Why do you exclude chlipin and disqualify it in an absolute way? Leave open the door for Eidam HaKpedes, for Pashta Yad V'Kibla. Just like the Gemara does in the context of Beit Shammai, that less than a dinar is kpeda, and for Bansei de Rav Yane, less than a tirk of a dinar is kpeda, but you could have Pashta Yad V'Kibla. If you're assuming that chalipin is a problem of kpeda, then Pashta Yad V'Kibla should operate. Would anyone entertain the possibility that basically, fundamentally, chalipin is a valid method of kinyan? It does qualify for kedusha isha. Just depends whether she's makpedas or not. It seems that in a very absolute way, the Mishnah excluded chalipin. According to Rashi, if it's a kpeda issue, it should depend upon her kpeda. I believe that this cash of kpeda and pashta, this cash of pashta yad of a kibla is a false accusation. It's unjustified. I understand Tosa's attack against Rashi that if the sugi is predicated on equating sada to isha, then we should derive shtar, we should derive chazaka. I even understand Tosus' attack against Rashi, that if so, that even Beis Hillel introduces Kpeda, and therefore we should ask about Bansei de Rav Yanai. But I don't understand why Tosus insists on attacking Rashi from the Gemara of Pashta Yoda. Pashta Yoda V'Kibla works within the context of Kiddushei Kesef. If you have Kesef, but you don't have enough kesef because she's makpedes, she could waive that kpeda and she could say pashta yad v'kibla. But our sugi is not dealing with kesef. Our sugi is addressing the question of kinyan chalipin. Does kinyan chalipin operate? Is it effective for kedusha isha? If there's an issue that arises within the context of chalipin because of kpeda, then I draw the conclusion that this kinyan is not a candidate, and it's a different type of kinyan, and it wasn't included in the Gzeirah Shavah from Sod to teach me Isha. Again, once you know Kiddushei Kesef operates, and we learn that from Stei Ephron, now you want to know, but what happens if you didn't give her enough Kesef? So here you could talk about, well, she says this is enough for me. But we're asking a different question. We're asking how far. What's the scope of the Gzeirah Shavah, Kicha Kicha? Does it include Chalipin? It doesn't not include Chalipin. If I can prove to you that Chalipin suffers from the problem of Kpeda, of Gnaihula, then I can decide that the scope and the Hekev of this Gzeirah Shavah does not include Chalipin. We're no longer asking the question, does Rachel or Leah have a kpeda, or is it pashta yada, they waive that kpeda? What we're asking is, what's the nature of the chalipin? If chalipin is the type of a kinyan that has a kpeda issue built into the kinyan, then that's proof positive that this kinyan is not a candidate for the Gzeirah Shavah of Kicha Kicha.
Also, would say Shavah Pruta.
Good, so your approach to is going to be Rabbeinu Tam. He's your friend. Rabbeinu Tam is going to say, we're not just trying to derive kinyan chalipin through some sort of hermeneutic principle. We're deriving kinyan chalipin because it's a subsidiary of what? Of kesef. And this leads us to the most fundamental issue here in the entire sugya. How to understand chalipin. There are basically two types of chalipin. There's chalipin classic, which is called a kinyan sudar. And then there's chalipin, which is called shava b'shava. Like, for example, just as a L'Sabra Zozin, there's a famous Mishnah in Bava Kamma called Hamachliv Para B'chamor. So you want my chamor, and I want your para. So we make a barter exchange. That's one type of chalipin. Your classical case of Mekach u'Memkar is what's called a kinyan domim. That means I give you money to pay the value of the object that you're selling me. So you, the Machna, give me the object, and I, in return, give you money. That's a classical kinyan mechira. What happens in chalipin? So there are two possibilities. We can have a chlipin on a kinyan damim, just that I don't have the damim to pay you. I want to clinch the deal. So I'll give you a sudar, and that kinyan sudar clinches the deal. Now I have to pay you the money. Or I can do an entirely different type of chlipin, which has nothing to do with sudar at all. It's just hamachlif par of the chamar, where we exchange two objects of value. You see, in the first case of kinyan sudar, basically, we're talking about a kinyan kesef. Just, I don't have the kesef to pay you, so we're looking for a substitute for kesef in order to clinch the deal. So we use a sudar. In the second case, we're dealing with an entirely, fundamentally different type of kinyan. It's not like mechir at all. Now, look at the difference. If I sell you my cow for $100, and I want to get the $100 from you, then look at the mocher and look at the lokeh, and tell me how many people are interested in acquiring a chefetz. One or two. Those are the only possible answers. Are they both interested in acquiring a chefetz, or is only one? What's the answer? Only one. Correct? So again, in your classical mechira, one person has a das to acquire ownership on an object. The other person wants to get paid for it. In chlipin of machlif para bechamar, we have a situation where how many people want to get an object? Two. Both the mocher and the lokech. You can't even talk about a mocher and a lokech. It's not the pshat that I'm selling you this para for your chamar. And the chamar is a method of payment. Really, I want to sell you the para, and you want to buy the para. Just you don't have money in your pocket, so you'll give me a chamar. That's not what's going on. What we're doing is, you want to get my para, and I want to get your chamar, so we make the swap. Again, the money is not an object. The money is a method of payment for the object. Do you hear the difference? In the case of damim, I don't want to give this to you as a gift. You're not expecting that I should give it to you as a gift. So kesef is a way of sort of placating the mocher to get him to agree to enter into this deal. But it wouldn't be fair to say that the mocher is interested in being koneh chefetz. Once you say that the mocher is interested in being koneh, and look at your terms here, the machna wants to be koneh, then the machna is the koneh. And the koneh is the machna. That's the difference between mechira and chlipin. At least chlipin in the second time. Mechira, there's only one machna and there's only one kone. The kesef is the means to get the mocher to agree to give, to be machna the object, to the lokeh. But everything revolves around the fact that there's an object that's being transferred to the lokeh. In the case of chlipin, where I switch one object for the other, you can't call one person the mocher and one person the lokeh. One the machna, one the kone. They're both the machna, they're both the kone. It's not that the object is being given. I'm giving you the chamar as a means of payment. But really, this whole thing revolves around the kinyan and the akna on the para. No, that's not true. The akna is on both the para and the chamar. And the reason why I emphasize this is because it indicates that chlipin and kesef are fundamentally two different types of kinyan. But wait a second. Look at Rashi. Rashi, chlipin, this is four lines up from the bottom of Gimel and Aleph, adds two words. What words does he say? Kinyan sudar. Hey, wait a minute. Rashi learns this whole sugya in a different way than I suggest. I suggest that we're talking about machlif para b'chamar, and therefore chlipin is a whole new category. Rashi says no. It's a kinyan sudar. What do you mean a kinyan sudar? I ask you the question. I'm going to give you my handkerchief and I'm going to buy a piece of karka that sells on the market for $100,000. You want to tell me that that's called machlif para b'chamar? You want to tell me that you're going to be machna your karka for a sudar? It's ridiculous. You're being machna me the karka for the $100,000. Right now I don't have the $100,000. I'll pay you the $100,000. And if I don't pay you, then the deal is off. But what are you going to do now to clinch the kinyan? You're going to give a suda. Why is Rashi insisting that the chlipin in our sugya is the kinyan sudar? What about the other chlipin? There's another type of chlipin where we just barter, we swap two different objects. Apparently Rashi wants to introduce kinyan sudar to demonstrate the sharp difference between kesef and chlipin. Do you follow my point? If I give you a sudar, that's a whole different kind of a kinyan. It's fundamentally different than kinyan kesef. Kinyan kesef means I'm giving you the kesef. This is exactly what you want. I'm giving you something for which you're makna. In the case of the sudar, nobody would say that you're makna me, you're kaka, because of the sudar. Give it a break. Especially if it's a used handkerchief. But the answer is that kinyan sudar is a whole different type of kinyan. In truth, what you want as a mocher is my money. But there's no money right now, wherever it is. So we need an act that would make this agreement binding and irreversible. So what do we use? We use a sudar. That's the entire chiddush of the parsha of a shalaf ish nalo olav. V'nasa l'reyehu. Basically, Ploni Almodi gave to Boaz karkos for what? For a nal? Alright, maybe it was an expensive shoe. You know, maybe it was short leather. What's her name? Was shoe from Wizard of the Oz?
Dorothy.
No, what was her name? Garland. Whatever her name was.
Judy Garland.
Judy Garland, right? Judy Garland's shoe. Where did I see Judy? Oh, it's in Washington, in the Smithsonian Institute. You know, people pay money to go in to see that pair of shoes. It wasn't. It's not that expensive shoe that you can sell it. You know, for hundreds of thousands of dollars. So Boaz gave a shoe, I mean, it's not much. You know, to say that the machna was machna something of great value, being karkos, for the sake of a shoe, is very difficult. And by the way, Chazal understand that it's lavdafka shoe, it's any kli.
How does this sort of engineering start? In both cases, you're saying I owe you money. If someone writes ashtar, I'm buying this field for $100,000, I owe you $100,000. So this ashtar says, I owe you $100,000 for that field. It's the same thing.
I don't think so. I'll tell you why. Because who writes the shtar?
The person.
Is it the buyer or the seller? The
buyer.
It's the seller. The seller writes the shtar. The shtar is a shtar hakna. It goes from the makna to the kona. See, if the shtar was going from the kona to the makna, you could say it's something similar to chlipit. But if the shtar is going from the makna to the kona, then it's fundamentally different. But be that as it may, let's just get back to chlipin. What I'm trying to explain is why the Gemara thinks that chlipin might be a whole different category over here than kesef. And then vacillate back and forth of whether it's included in the Gzeirah Shavah or it's not included in the Gzeirah Shavah. Whether it's part of Kicha, Kicha Mistayefer or not. The answer is that we're talking about Kinyan Sudar, says Rashi. Kinyan Sudar is radically different than a Kinyan Kesef. In Kinyan Kesef, I'm going to give you this object, this karko, or a transfer ownership on this parah because you're giving me domim. I'm very happy that you're giving me currency and cash that's worth on the market the value of this object. But in the case of Sudar, you can't say that the machna is so happy and he's so dancing in the streets because he got this handkerchief. It's a totally different type of kid. So therefore the Gemara has to work very hard now to explain why if chlipin is a separate kinyan, if chlipin is a separate kinyan and it's radically different than kesef, so the Gemara has to add this whole tralala here to explain why would we even think that chlipin should work. And the answer is Sal Kedaita Chamina Ho VeGomar Kicha Kicha Misteyefron. So again, the way Rashi approaches this sugya, chlipin is a separate category of kesef. Would it qualify for kedushin or not? It depends on kicha kicha. So the Gemara says, V'yei Malchinami. If you have kicha kicha, so let's derive chalipin. And the Gemara says, no, you can't derive chalipin. Even when you have a gzera shava, it's dominovuki biasra. You have to have some logic that doesn't undermine, doesn't torpedo this new place. You know what I mean? Like, for example, would you say that Kiddushin should be Balkarcha based on the Hekesh of Havayaliyatsiv? Get his Balkarcha. Even a Hekesh of Gzeirah Shavah has its limitations. And that's where the Rashi introduces what concept? In order to torpedo this Gzeirah Shavah applying to Chlipin? Kpeda. If not for Kpeda, then we'd have to include the Gzeirah Shavah. And Tosis jumps on Rashi. If so, then let's talk about Shtar. That's also going to be derived from this Gzeirah Shavah. Let's talk about Chazakah. Satosis is unwilling to say, to postulate, that the whole candidacy of Chlipin rests on what? On the Gzeirah Shavah of Kicha Kicha. That was just the technicality that the Gemara mentioned. But V'yem al-Chinami is because, as you said before, Tzvi, Chlipin is a kind of Kesef. Tosis's language is Ke'en Kesef. Why is it Ke'en Kesef? So what is Tosis's answer? What's his kli worth? It's worth a pruta. Ah, the kli has to be worth a pruta. What does that prove? That proves that the kohen is giving something to the machne. It's not just some sort of handshake, mazel bracha, some sort of symbolic act to clinch the kinyan. But it really is some sort of tmura that I give you something and you give me something in return. I mean, Ben Shalom, you'd have to be, they'd commit you to an insane asylum to say that you would sell a karka for a handkerchief that's worth a pruta. But nevertheless, I gave you something. The Torah says that a pruta is something of value. Kibalta mashma. These are the Vatshalechim. That's enough to be Gomer Umachmet. So then, Rabosai, what we come down to is really two ways of looking at Chalipin. One way is to compare it to Kesem, one way to say it's fundamentally different than Kesem. And it all hinges on the following question: what is Chalipin? Does Chalipin mean I give you something, and therefore you give me something? What does that sound like? Kesef? Well, no. I'm not giving you anything. Come on. Let's not be foolish about it. This is a Maisa Kinyan. This is a Kinyan that the Torah was Mechadish in the parish of Rus, Vishalaf Yishnal Meyov. This is not Kesef. Kesef means I'm giving you something that's worth something. There's an exchange that you're interested in. I gave you something, now you give me the Sada back. That's not what Chalipin is. Says Rabbi Natan, oh, wait a minute, don't jump to any conclusions. Chalipin has a very heavy dimension of kesef to it. Because the chalipin was done with what kind of kli? A kli that shava pruta. This kli has a market value. Don't be mezalzel so much and exclude it, bump it off, I didn't give you anything. I did give you something. And that element of chalipin bekli shu shava pruta that was given from the Kona to the Machna, now the Machna has something, that's what clinches his Gemiras Das, to give you something in return. Not to say that it's commensurate. Certainly in value terms, it's a fraction of the value. But at the end of the day, I gave you something. If I gave you something, it's a kind of kinyan of kesef. And Tosis might even go a step further, and I'll prove it to you, because there's another type of chalipin. What was the second type of chalipin? Not chalipin of Sudar, but what? Chalipin of Amachlif Parah B'Chamor, where we exchange two objects. That also works under the category of Kinyan Chalipin, as the Gemara says about Metziah Mem Zayin. And there, in that case, certainly you would say that I'm giving you the Parah because I want your Chamor, and back and forth. That's similar to Kesef. Until the Gemara comes to the conclusion that you misunderstood the nature of Chalipin. And I'll prove to you that chalipin is not that I gave you something, I gave you a suder, you're excited about the suder, and therefore tmura in exchange, you'll be willing to be machna the karaka. It's not at all similar to kesef. It's a formal kinyan to clinch the gemiras das, to make the kinyan irreversible. How do I prove it to you? No, how does Gemara prove you that you misunderstood Chalipin?
Because Chalipin works even by Pachas Mishum.
If Chalipin works by Pachas Mishum and Pruta, you see that the Kinyan Chalipin has not changed one iota. It's not affected at all by the value of this Kli. Whether the toothpick sells for a Pruta, whether the pen, the used handkerchief sells for a Pruta, doesn't sell for a Pruta. Where do we find something similar, Kasriel? Where the value of the market of the object is not relevant at all to the nature of the Kinyan? Shtar. Shtar would be a paradigm. So Rabbeinu Tam quotes the case of Shtar. The Shtar might be worth a Pruta. Imagine a Shtar that was written by Rav Soloveitchik. I would pay $1,000 for such a Shtar. I'm not joking. I'd get a good deal if I paid $1,000. And today's market is probably worth a few thousand. You know the story that the Rav once ripped up a ksuba because he was so angry at the Chosid Kal, they didn't confer with him beforehand. So the family was aghast. That ksuba was written by an artist. So the Rav took out a piece of paper, started writing a ksuba, and he said, I promise you, this ksuba will be a lot worth, one day worth a lot more than the ksuba I ripped up. It's true. Imagine if I had a ksuba handwritten by the Rav. It would be unbelievable. The Rav once wrote a letter to my father. For 50 years we're fighting in the family. Who has that letter? Nobody knows who has it. But it's funny because my brother says he's going to get me a photocopy of the letter. There's something missing over here. Anyway. So, but what difference does it make? In shtar, does it matter who wrote the shtar? Whether you can sell it on eBay or not? Whether it has John Hancock's signature? The shtar is a shtar is a shtar. So you see that I can give you a shtar with a shavah pruta. It can be written on gold, with gold studs on it. It's irrelevant to the shtar. The kinyan is not because of the inherent value of the shtar. So too in chalipin. I prove to you that the value of the sudar is totally irrelevant. Because I can give you a sudar that's not worth a pruta, kli that's not worth a pruta, and yet the chalipin is exactly identical. It'll be just as effective. Okay, just to say a few words about Yom Kippur, and then we'll get a chance to get into chalipin again. The Mishnah says in Yuma, "Ein Yom Kippur mechaper el al averos shebeinonim lemoka, al averos shebeinonim lechavero ad shiratzes chavero." You know, it's very interesting. The Rambam, when he describes the day of Yom Kippur, he calls it Yom Tzom. Does anybody know what the word Tzom comes from? The root of the word Tzom? Itamar? Tzama. What is it? Tzama? Anybody know what Tzama is? When you'll have girls who go to Beis Yaakov, you'll figure it out. Tzama braids. But Beis Yaakov, you can't have long hair unless you braid it. You know, that's not negated in my family, but many of my neighbors, you know, like girls who have hair down to here literally, but it's all braided. What's the relationship between the word tzama and the word tzom? You remember the Gemara in Tainis that says, "Kol Tainis shein ima miposha Yisrael lav Tainisi." How do we open up Yom Kippur? Who do we invite in to join us in synagogue on Yom Kippur? Avaryanim, why? Avaryanim, boy, you say that word in Israel today and people get scared. You know, you never know what an avaryan could mean in Israel. You know, some Israelis could be rough criminals, you know. They say about the FBI in L.A. that they turn to the Israelis to help them out with crime in L.A. I won't go into detail about that, but you know, avaryanim, who wants to introduce avaryanim? Tell me, Tzvi, you want to sit next to an avaryan in shul? But I'll tell you something about my father's shul. On an average Shabbos in Flatbush of then, we had about 250 mispal. On Yom Kippur, we had 1,200 mispal. That's what it means to invite the avaryanim. And if you don't invite the avaryanim, apparently, it's not a Yom Tzom. Because the Yom Tzom means all of Klal Yisrael. And the reason for that is because when I come as an individual on Yom Kippur to ask the Ribbono Shel Olam for Kapara, I don't know. I'm not sure if it cuts the mustard. kapor of Yom Kippur is a kapor of Tzibur. Insofar as I'm part of a Tzibur, through the pipelines of the Tzibur I get kapor. And the proof of the matter is that Sarya Mishtalech, which was the quintessential mechaper on Yom Kippur at the time of the Migdash, was a carbon Tzibur. And so the Mishnah says, Ad Shiratzes Chavero. Yiratzes Chavero means to reconnect with your Chavero. And if you have a friendship, to try to increase it and intensify it. And by the way, it's Bein Adam Lishto as well. I always shudder, my mom is shudder, when I think of the story they tell about Rav Shlomo Zalman Auerbach. I'm sure you've all heard it, at the Levaya of his wife. That he didn't ask Mechil, which is the Midag Yerushalayim. And I don't know who the smart aleck was who had the chutzpah to ask Rav Shlomo Zalman, why did he ask Mechil? I wouldn't have asked that question. So Rav Shlomo Zalman said, what do you mean? They asked Mechil, we never had, there's no reason to ask Mechil. Imagine a man was married to his wife for 60 years. I can't see how you can be married to your wife for 60 minutes without having to ask Mechil. 60 years? And he has no occasion to ask Mechil? So when I think about Achiratas Chavera, the Pachad Pchadim of entering into Yom Kippur, and you know, Biyad Adam Ala Pola, the David Amel, says, yo, at least the Rachmanis of HaKadosh Baruch Hu, I can rely on Hashem. He has mercy, he loves us, he's a Rachman. As the Ramban says, that Yom Kippur is essentially a Yom Rachamim, Rachamim Bidin, but Rachamim. But a person, a human being, to reach that level, at Shefayis is Chavero, Yeratas Chavero, that's the Pachad Pachadim of Yom HaKippur. My father, Zichron Levrach, used to quote the Bali Musar. I never got a chance to ask him who he had in mind, who say that each one of the days of Aseres Yimei Tshuva correspond to another one of the Aseres HaDibra. So Rosh Hashanah is Keneged Anochi and Lo Yilecha, in other words, Bein Olam, Lamakom. It's classical, typical relationship between man and king and the king of kings. But the last word in the Aseres HaDibros is what? Don't all answer at once. L'reyach. Because Yom Kippur represents Bein Adam L'reyach. Because Yom Kippur is Yom Tzom. Yom Kippur requires a Tzibur. Yom Kippur requires Kaparas HaTzibur. So on this day, I mean, it's almost Erev Yom Kippur. I mean, by the time I land, it'll be pretty much Erev Yom Kippur. We ask Hashem to give us the ability to create a Tzibur. To have a Tainis Miposhe Yisrael, that every Givun, every color and every creed and every part and every dimension of Klal Yisrael should be together. And with that unity of Klal Yisrael, we come to you, HaKadosh Baruch Hu, we sing Avinu Malkeinu, and we sing Hashem Nebagadnu. How can you sing it? The answer is because if we're a Tzibur, we can sing it. Because we know that will Mirtz Hashem achieve the kapar. So I want to wish everyone a wonderful, meaningful, powerful Yom Kippur, a Gemar Chsi Matova. Thanks again for all the shiurim, for the chizuk, for all the learning together. And also, since I won't see you probably on Sukkot, unless you'll be in Eretz Yisrael, and hopefully those who will be in Eretz Yisrael will get together, I want to wish you Chag Sameach, and the Simcha of Simchas HaTorah should be the Simcha that propels us and projects us for Simchas HaTorah throughout the entire year to come. Kei Nirotzon, Amen.